Metro Talk with Jerry Phillips, your Sunday morning community radio magazine, bringing communities and people together.
What makes this segment so interesting is you're calling in, because we discuss, this is politics, and that's not really a dirty word in this town, but the fact is that these are thinkers, and in their own right, shakers and makers of decisions and things that they do in their own parties. But we try to at least mix it up pretty good. But the big thing is you're calling in and telling them what you think, or telling them whether you agree or disagree. We all communicate. That's the important thing. Telephone number 301-230-0980, pound 980 on the Verizon Wireless System. We've extended our time here on the first Sunday roundtable debate. We have Dean Meyerson of the Green Party.
Hi, Jerry.
We also have Dana Jones, Democrat.
Hi, how you doing?
I think, Dana, they purposely cut your mic.
Did they?
Yeah.
Is this a Republican?
Can we find her mic, please?
Board?
There you go.
There's not a Republican at the switchboard, Jerry. What's going on here?
I don't know. I'm not going to comment. Rather embarrassing.
That was me.
James Parmalee, who is a Republican.
Thanks for having us.
Messing with the controls. And Nicholas Sawalk, not last, nor least, but he is definitely highly spoken of and highly spoken, or something like that.
More
Libertarian
than Jerry.
He's highly something.
Spoken about me.
As long as he's not high, everything is okay.
Well,
okay.
He is a libertarian.
Okay. Well, everybody, welcome to our first Sunday Roundtable for June the 2nd, year 2002. A lot of things happening. Let's start off with first, as we read in this morning's news headlines, President Bush says the U.S. will adopt a first strike policy in the war against terrorism. He said at West Point's graduation yesterday that there will be a preemptive strike, if that's what it takes to protect Americans. Are we hearing this as a repeat? Is this a, what you call a replay by the media over and over again? Or do we hear from the White House more of this thing about let's frighten Americans?
Well, the newspapers, the media, were complaining that he wasn't doing enough. And so then he goes out and does things, and they say he's doing too much. I think the lesson there is you can never make the media happy, but clearly President Bush has made the American people happy.
Yeah, I feel like I'm waking up in Groundhog Day, Jerry. Every day the same story. And I think that all Americans are behind our president and are behind our soldiers, more importantly, in this war on terrorism. But unfortunately, it's the only language and it's the only rhetoric that we're hearing from the White House. I want to hear about domestic policy. I want to hear about what's going on and what we're going to do about so many things here in this country. Let's have a conversation about Social Security and how we've stolen from the trust fund. Let's talk about all of these things. And I'm hearing war, 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 because you know what? That's what does well in the poll numbers. And so I'd like to hear more about domestic policy. Let's spend 50-50 on this.
Yeah, that's true. I think that Bush is keeping the issue away from many of the other issues that he doesn't do as well with the American public, in keeping it on this issue, because he knows that many people, in particular a lot of Democrats, are not willing to criticize him on these issues. But there isn't a lot of details or substance to these. We just hear again that we need to be afraid, that we need to be careful. Question with preemptive. Nobody's against preventing terrorist strikes, as long as we know who's doing it, as long as what we do is clearly targeted towards stopping terrorism and has a clear goal, as opposed to just generally throwing out governments or sending the army in where we're not sure.
See, the thing is, with a first strike policy, you lose some of the moral authority that we had for so long with the Cold War. But regardless of that, what sort of America are we protecting if we've let a single terrorist attack change our entire tenor of our country? So all we talk about is blowing other people up and war, 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 and we don't actually focus on what's going on at home.
Well, I think we're focused on what's going on at home. There are terrorists roaming around trying to kill us, and I think that, quite frankly, President Bush and
two of these terrorists.
Well,
Al-Qaeda is still out there.
They are still out there, and the FBI, the CIA, all those folks, and we get on their cases because they miss something. And you're going to miss things periodically, but the things that don't make headlines are all of the times the FBI and the CIA stopped a terrorist attack, and those things have come up time and time again. And, you know, we have to be vigilant. I mean, this is a very important issue. And I think we should remember, even prior to all of this, President Bush was very popular. He's become more popular because people have seen what a strong wartime leader he is. And I think it's going to continue. I mean, he's doing an excellent job.
But we've still declared no war, and we still have no we have no solid enemy. We have all of these warnings that there are non-specific threats and that something might happen this weekend.
And the second there was a non-specific threat, you know, a year and a half ago, all of a sudden, you know, people are saying, well, why didn't you look out of this one of 3,000 intelligence reports?
Wasn't that ignored? In this morning's headlines, coming out show that the FBI asked for millions of dollars, $60 million or something like
they
that.
They weren't even on the top 10 list of John Ashcroft's
right.
most
and they,
important
and
things.
John Ashcroft ignored
he
said, it.
And because he's Bill, going after Bill, the pornographers.
Bill,
he's
Bill so- Clinton. Bill Clinton ignored, and it, I know they're waiting for this over here, Bill Clinton ignored an offer to hand over Al-Qaeda. Hand over the whole organization, and
could you
Bill
cite
Clinton
your reference?
Ignored it.
Cite your reference. Where did this information
Sudan,
come
the
from?
The Sudan had him. The Sudan said.
No, where did this information that you come from? Was it in the Post? Was it?
You do recall that when they expelled them from Saudi Arabia, they were looking for a place to stay. They found the Sudan. The Sudan did not want them and offered the Justice Department the opportunity. The Clinton
but
Justice
this goes
Department.
Back to George Bush Sr. Does it
no,
not?
No, this goes back to
yes,
Bill.
It does.
This,
you
goes,
know what?
This goes to back to Bill Clinton, and Bill Clinton had an opportunity right there. And guess what? Bill Clinton's FBI said, "Gee, we don't know what we could
it's
possibly
the same
charge
FBI.
Him with."
It's the same FBI. And let's also talk about something else. I find it absolutely remarkable that whatever happens in this administration, whatever happens in this Congress, it's Bill Clinton's fault. And the American people are so sick
of
this.
Well, if you don't want to talk about
your
the past, don't talk about the past.
Your
look,
dead
you
horse cannot
you
know, be
guys,
beaten anymore.
We can all sing together.
Yeah, if you want
but
to talk
can't
about
talk together.
If you want to talk about the past, you could point out that this current president gave financial aid to the Taliban at a point when we knew Osama bin Laden was in Afghanistan.
Libertarian that's supposed to be smoking something, not the Green Party.
Oh, this is public
that's
aid.
That's ridiculous.
No, it was reported. He gave
our
aid to them.
Our telephone number is... I forgot the phone number. No, 301-230-0980.
Call us, please.
301-230-0980, #980 on the Verizon wireless system. And that's free if you call in on Verizon.
We've got a long tradition in this country of backing people who turn around and bite us, you know, 5-10 years down the road. And, you know, Dean makes a good point. The Taliban, Saddam Hussein.
Yeah, we did give arms. We did give money because we were trying, because you know what? At that time, we didn't like the Russians, and they were fighting against the Russians. So the same stuff that we gave them. But you know what? What we're doing there is we're trying to help one country. We're trying to say, hey, listen, we can't get involved, but we'll give you these weapons to defend yourself because you have nothing.
That's called imperialism.
I have got to correct the story. The left is trying to say that somehow America supported these folks, these Al-Qaeda folks,
during the Afghanistan and the
Taliban. Let me tell you this. During the war against the Soviets, we backed the Northern Alliance. We backed the Lion of the Panjshir, Massoud, the guy who was killed by Al-Qaeda. We backed those guys, and the Taliban and those folks, they came along for the ride. Okay. We backed the Democratic opposition there in Afghanistan 10 years ago.
All right, my dear folks, I asked one question. Did you see what happened? I'm not going to ask any more questions. All right, on the agenda this morning, President George Bush traveled overseas to seek peace alliances in Germany, where there was a big protest about the president. They didn't want to be involved. Russia, where there was some type of a treaty that was signed, again, a missiles arms treaty. And in Italy, where he met with the Pope, and he wanted to get the Pope straight on how to run the Catholic Church. And France, where, of course, well, who cared, to fight his war on terrorism. That was his trip to Europe. What were his achievements? Who did he win over? And are the American allies more curious about the White House plans for fighting a full-scale war in the Middle East?
The big achievement of this trip was the arms treaty with the Russians. It's probably the best foreign policy move I've seen George Bush make. It gives them a face-saving way out, and let's just get less arms.
I think that what stands out to me during this entire time was Bush lashing out at the press, at our own American press who went over. In France, we had an NBC reporter who asked a question to the president, then turned to the prime minister and asked a question in French. The president was so upset that he called him out right there and then. He felt as though he was making him look stupid. And I think that...
He wasn't making him look stupid. You had a reporter who was being a complete ass.
No, he
wasn't.
And
the president called him on it. God bless America.
He was not. You know, he looked to the prime minister and asked in his native language.
He was being a pompous ass.
No, that's called courtesy. That's called courtesy when you know the language and you speak it to the
person.
With a little courtesy, let's go and talk to Eli in Northwest Washington. Good morning, Eli.
Good morning. How are you?
Fine.
Listen, I think it's a huge mistake to make it seem like the national security failures that may or may not have led to 9/11 is somehow a partisan issue. I mean, you're seeing an evidence of, I mean, for the most part, I think that both parties, at least in their foreign policy brain trust, agreed on a number of assumptions that are being reconsidered right now. And, you know, and I also would like to correct some of the statements that have been made. Yes, it's true that President Bush signed off on some anti-narcotics aid to the Taliban. But this is also a president whose one of the first moves in office was to shut down the Taliban's UN mission and declare them sort of illegal in this country to be representing any sort of Afghanistan diplomatically. The money that was specifically given to the Taliban was in response to a fairly successful program to cut down on opium production in the country. As for the Sudan situation, I wouldn't say that there was necessarily a quid pro quo. No Clinton administration official, particularly Susan Rice, the Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, has never admitted that they had necessarily an offer. This is something that was communicated through back channels, and at the time the Clinton administration was trying to evaluate the veracity of that particular deal. And I think that the biggest stumbling block is Saudi Arabia, which is a country that both parties, particularly the oil industry at this point, are still trying to apologize for their pretty open support for Middle Eastern terrorism.
Okay. Eli, don't leave me. Hold on the line, okay? Let's get another opinion from Jeff, who's down in Brandywine, Maryland. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning. How are y'all?
Fine. You heard what Eli said, and you've heard what the panelists say. Let's get your input.
Yeah, I'd like to piggyback on what Eli said and step back a little bit as to what the lady and gentleman, how it's been discussed. You want to hear what the American public is sick of? We are sick and tired of each group stepping back, pointing the finger at the other, saying, well, we did, you did. Stop it. Do you remember the old saying, united we stand, divided we fall? Well, ladies and gentlemen, we are setting ourselves up for failure. Yes, maybe we do stick our nose into too many affairs abroad, and we bank or gamble and try to do something, and then it bites us in the butt. But goodness gracious, let's stop this. And let's everybody admit to mistakes. Let's correct the problems. Let's get together and move on.
Well, you know
what,
sir?
That's the stick of.
Sorry.
Go ahead, ma'am.
I want to say good morning to you, too. Thanks for calling in. And actually,
I need the sarcastic twist.
I actually don't know exactly where you're coming from, because I think that what we were saying is that no one really pointed the finger one way or another. We're talking about the facts that happened, so.
Well, just before I called, ma'am, both y'all were bantering. No, you, the Clinton administration. No, you, the Bush. No, you want to go back in history? Well, how about you did? Let's all own up to mistakes that we've made, I'm saying, and let's look at, we've got a group, a faction, organizations, whatever you want to call it out there, that wants to crumble us, that wants to destroy us, whatever reason wants to do these things to us. And if we don't get together, ladies and gentlemen, my God, we are assisting them in doing that.
Eli,
and we agree.
Hold tight. Let me get Eli in on here. Eli, respond, please.
Well, I don't think that it makes sense to talk about foreign policy right now in terms of Democrats versus Republicans.
That's right.
Look at Joe Lieberman. Joe Lieberman is incredibly critical of the State Department right now. For what? For not funding the INC, Iraqi rebels, that we would hope could affect regime change and take out Saddam Hussein. Senator Lieberman is one of the leaders of the Democratic Party. He's criticizing the State Department, which is normally considered the moderate wing of the Bush administration. I see these sorts of distinctions all the time, and I think that the other caller has a point that the idea of finger-pointing doesn't necessarily make a lot of sense. What is interesting to me, though,
very quickly, I got to cut you off.
Sure.
Go ahead.
What is interesting is it seems that the president often does reflect the opinions of the last person he spoke to, and he has not necessarily had a consistent message up to now.
Well, okay. He's been listening to the right people.
Eli, thank you very much. Jeff, good point. United we stand. Whatever happened to that after the first NFL game last fall, and whatever happened to that after the holidays? Let's go to James and Boyd. Good morning, James. How you doing?
The first two callers kind of said exactly what I was thinking, especially the second guy. The panelists are all all touting their party lines and not really trying to solve any problems.
Okay, but isn't that what we Americans are about?
The reason that America is worth defending and worth protecting,
James,
is
turn your radio down, please.
It's the vibrancy of our political debate in this country. The ability of our country to withstand open criticism of the federal government.
Well, not just that. It's that we can have people of varying opinions. That's what makes, and that's what they're afraid of.
When my fellow panelists say that we should be withdrawn and that we shouldn't go and first strike terrorism before it can get us, it's my job as the Republican, as the conservative, to step in and stand up for America and say we have to do that sort of thing. And actually, I was in this room when our Green Party representative said just that.
This gives James a fair shake here. Go ahead, James.
I was sitting right here listening to our panel, and everybody's nipping at George Bush's heels about, oh, he's doing too much. Oh, he's doing too much. A couple of weeks ago, they were all nipping and saying, oh, he's not doing enough. Oh, he's not doing enough. I'm just saying, look,
actually,
George Bush is stepping in and doing a good job.
Ask what his domestic agenda was.
Yeah.
Let's go back to James and Boy and clear this up. James, you have the last word.
You're just proving what I said. You just continue on. You don't listen to what anybody has to say except your own agendas.
Okay, thank you very much, James. Let's go to Robert in Sterling, Virginia. Good morning, Robert.
Jerry, thanks for having me on again. I love these discussions here.
Thank you very much for being a part of it.
Listen, I was going to hammer home that first point to you all, but it looks like everyone else has done it for me. I don't think it's prudent to go back into history. Again, when one gentleman pointed out, when it was kind of accepted doctrine, a lot of the things that we were doing on both sides of the aisle. I would like to turn it back to, if the Democrats are so eager to turn it back to domestic issues, one thing that I would like to see them do, since the Republicans have put forth various plans for Social Security, all the Democrats can do is kind of tear those down. I want to see the Democrats put forth a plan by their leadership and say, this is what we're in support of. This is how we're going to fix Social Security. Because every time the Republicans say we've got ideas, the Democrats resort to scare tactics.
Democrats have been kind of shaky.
I do have something somewhere where you can go if you have access to the Internet. When all of these plans do come forth, there always is a Democratic substitute if you want to go to http://thomas.loc.gov. That's the Library of Congress, and it has all bills and their texts. And you can go and look and read all of those. They are all there.
Well, why can't I hear about it in the press? Why do I always hear the Republicans' version of saving Social Security? Why can't I ever hear about the Democrats' version?
Well, you know what? I agree with you on that, and I'd like to know why there's not a lot of talk from both sides.
What about the Green Party?
We have a perfect opportunity here to hear from our Democrat. Answer his question.
I am. If you could stop talking for a second, I would do that. Actually, what we're talking about here is let's just be even in the press. I think a lot of times we don't hear both sides. Sometimes when the Democrats run away with an issue, you don't hear a lot about what the Republicans are doing. So at that time, I would have to turn to the press and say, let's do 50-50. Let's do, even Steven. So I agree with you, sir. And also, you could go to the Democrats.org website and look at their Social Security plan there as well.
Right.
Thanks, Robert.
Thank you.
Jerry, she didn't tell us how the Democrats were going to fix Social Security. I'm waiting.
Well, while you're waiting, let me say that Dean Morrison, Green Party, along with Dana Jones, Democrat, James Pomerley, who is Republican, and Nicholas Sawalk, who is a Libertarian Party, the four of them are here on our first Sunday roundtable. And they live all month long and think only of Metro Talk because they know the first Sunday they can come in here and expound upon their own ideologies, which they are different, and that's the American way. Our telephone number 301-230-0980, #980 in a Verizon wireless system, absolutely free call. Get online now and express yourself. When have I heard that? Anyway, sounds like good old Motel days. Expression time. What do you think about the Pope and the President? And the Pope, he was saying, fine, thank you very much, Mr. Bush. Appreciate your input. But the President felt that he should comment on the problems in the American Catholic Church.
It's valid for the President to meet with the Pope as a fellow head of state.
So is he going to the Baptist Convention and the Lutheran Convention?
As a fellow head of state, the Vatican City is in fact a country.
True.
So it is valid for the President to meet and express the concerns that our head of state has. When he gets into the internal affairs of the Catholic Church, that's a step too far.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think that he's going to do that too much. I think he's expressing concern that a lot of people have on this issue that was buried when a lot of these problems occurred 10 or 20 years ago. And
it was an American headline, big time. Okay, let's move on, guys, because right now we have a big task. This morning's newspaper headlines dealing with Maryland politics. And if anybody, I was telling my boss the other day, we were riding down the elevator, Bennett Zier, who is our excellent regional vice president. And I was telling him, I said, Mr. Zier, you know, the elections are coming up, and we in public affairs, naturally, it was coming, hitting the boss in the back shoulder. But anyway, the elections are coming up, and we're getting ready to gear up for the elections and all of our programming, naturally. But I said, you know, the biggest thing this year is excitement in Maryland. And lo and behold, this morning's paper has certainly backed me up. The governor's race seems to be closer than expected, reports show. Kathleen Townsend is faced with some uncertain support in key conservative areas. How close is the race? Now going into summer, 6 months away, do you think she's going to say, Ehrlich, go back home? James, I'll go to you first.
I think we have a wonderful opportunity here to bring responsible government back to Maryland. And Bob Ehrlich is the right person to do it. And the polls showing that it's closing are very good. Because remember, Republicans don't do as well in polls because there's a lot of uncounted Republican votes out there. And you can always take a poll, particularly closer to the end of the campaign, and add a few points for the Republicans because Republicans finish strong and have a better get-out-the-vote effort.
Okay. What about that, Dana?
I think that, as always, Maryland has always had the most entertaining elections in the past few years. I think we could look at both of the two gubernatorial races where Salisbury and Glendenning went head-to-head. Both times it was so close, and we couldn't, you know, we didn't know what was going to happen. I worked on both of those campaigns. And let's just take the last one, for instance. There was a chance that perhaps Glendenning could only win by 1%, by 2%. There were all these rumors out. At the day's any won by over 11%. And I think that overall, Maryland is a very well-run government. We're one of the best in the country, and I will stand by that. Our government has done a wonderful job. And I think Mr. Ehrlich is a good candidate for the Republicans. I think he's viable. However, I think overall is more conservative than most of the constituents in the state of Maryland.
He's coming out against the death penalty in this morning's headlines.
Right. And I think what we also need to do is look at his voting history, because we do have something that we can turn to. Look at his voting history as a congressman. It is very, very conservative, and he was one of the GOP's favorite little boys. So let's be careful. What we can say before on the campaign trail and what we do and what our voting record is are two different things.
I don't know what voting record you were looking at. I mean, this is a guy with a very moderate record.
Well, actually, right. You're wrong.
Well, let's go to Nicholas, because Nicholas has, I know he wants to get in this.
Well, it's entertaining is probably a word that I'd also use for Maryland politics. What I find entertaining is just the way the candidates scramble over each other to take each other's positions. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think that this election should actually be more interesting than the others, because we have Libertarian candidate Spear Lancaster running. For the first time in 36 years, there's going to be a third choice and not, you know, a Democrat and a Republican trying to look like a Democrat. And it's ironic to me that, you know, the Glendenning-Sourbray race was so close. I think that what that bespeaks is a lack of leadership on the part of the Democratic Party in Maryland. If you can have a 2-to-1 edge in voter registration, Democrats to Republicans, and yet keep coming into these, like, razor-thin elections, that means that something's wrong with your constituents are not feeling that they're being represented appropriately. And I think that Townsend is, you know, just like Glendenning in that respect, but worse.
My correction. I said that he was putting an end to the death penalty.
And he's not.
He's not. He's putting an end to the debate about
to the moratorium,
right,
actually.
He
wants to put an end to the moratorium. Right. And he says, actually, here's a quote right now from the paper that says that there was no question that the man next due for execution was guilty. So I guess he had...
Right. I'm sorry, I made that mistake. Dean, I want to turn to you, my dear friend. We hear that the Libertarian has a candidate, the Democrats and Republicans have candidates. Are people kind of tired of this two-party system, in a sense?
Well, you know, we had the caller earlier on complaining about the sort of program tendency that Democrats and Republicans have always to blame the other to get their point in, and it prevents people from taking an honest look about what's working and what's not working, and that's why third parties play such a critical role, because we don't have that partisanship. Greens and Libertarians, too, are willing to criticize both parties where appropriate. Now, the Greens aren't running a gubernatorial candidate this time. We're coming from the bottom up. We have some excellent House delegates in districts 20, 30, and 43 that your listeners hopefully will take a look at if they live there. And just in general, take a look at these third-party candidates because they can avoid this partisanship and really look at real solutions.
Let's talk to Gary in Lanham. Good morning, Gary.
Good morning. My problem is this, you know, you've talked a lot about the terrorists, but you always talk about, you know, the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. But I think the president has been inviting domestic terrorists into the White House with the conservatives that have been out there shooting doctors and blowing up abortion clinics. And to me, they're just as much a terrorist, terrorizing the American people, because they are engaging in activities against these people that are not doing anything illegal. They're perfectly legitimate clinics, helping people, you know, with their problems, and that these people, you know, kill the doctors, blow up the clinics, and attack the children in public places, humiliating them and threatening, you know, even the patients in their homes are coming to or from the clinics.
Yeah, that statement is absolutely ridiculous. There has not been one single person involved in any of that invited to the White House. That's like saying the Democrats support the Earth First people who maim loggers. I mean, that's just absolutely ridiculous. Neither the Democrats don't support
him,
and the Republicans don't support
him. Okay, Gary.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, what I was saying is, you know, the president says anybody that's associated with Al-Qaeda, that they've shut down these money laundering places and stuff, you know, they've not killed anybody. They've laundered money. They put up, you know, fronts for these people. And so do these people that march and stuff like that and go into the White House. You know, there are fronts for all of these organizations that, you know, go into, and they're actually, you know, murder squads. And I think that, you know, the president being associated with those, I think, is disgusting.
Right. So are you going to shut down the Sierra Club because of Ted Kaczynski? I mean, come on, get real here.
I think that the caller brings up a good point that you know, if you look at the way the war on terrorism is being conducted, we're taking and painting the entire spectrum of organizations that say support Palestinian rights. We're painting the entire spectrum with the people at the far end of it and saying that anybody who's on this side of the issue is a terrorist organization. We have to freeze their money because there are people on the far end who are violent.
You know, I'm not aware that Bush is actually associated with any of the people guilty of these crimes, but it does paint that their terrorism is a broader issue, and it would certainly be good for the White House to put more energy on all types of it. I know there's a need to focus on this particular type because of the extreme form of terrorism that occurred last September, but there's other types too, and we need to focus on all of them.
Okay, let's talk to Monty at Andrews Air Force Base. Good morning, Monty.
Good morning. You know, we talk a lot about the American people and what do the American people want. Well, I've been in the military 18 years. I'm married. I got 4 children. I consider myself speaking for the American people. We spent 8 years where we got very complacent and we really didn't care. Or we didn't, I don't want to say didn't care, but we got too relaxed. And we let the other nations take advantage of us in different ways. And as an Air Force personnel, on the edge of my seat, can be deployed at any minute to serve my country anywhere in the world.
Okay, Monty, I appreciate what you're saying. Can you get to a point or to a question?
Yes. My point is that as American people, we want to feel safe. We want the government to take care of our families, to take care of the safety of our people. And I feel like that's the bottom line, what we need to get back to.
Okay, thank you very much, Monty. Almost leads us into our next agenda item here, Homeland Security. But before we get into that, I've got to ask you about Mrs. Morello.
Yes.
Connie Morello.
Yes.
A wonderful lady.
Wonderful lady. Everybody loves Connie Morello.
Everyone loves Connie.
But according to some of the headlines this morning and some of the papers that
shaping up as an amazing race is the front page of the Washington Post. And you know what? I think we all knew that this was going to be one amazing race to watch. And you don't even have to be from the metro area to think that. I mean, let's face it, around the country, they know that this is going to be one amazing race.
Republicans don't want to lose the House, but there are 2 Kennedys running now in the state of Maryland, at least associated Kennedys. And Mark Shriver is strong against her.
Everyone in Massachusetts is going to annex Maryland? I mean, my goodness.
They both start with M.
Mark Shriver grew up his entire life here.
In Maryland. Everyone loves Connie except for her 4 Democratic opponents.
I've actually worked with Mrs. Morello on the VAWA, Violence Against Women Act, when I worked in Congress. Obviously, I think that she's an excellent candidate. She's a wonderful woman. I think some of the things that the Montgomery County constituents want to look at is they're very savvy voters. Montgomery County, I mean, they're right next to the nation's capital. They're very savvy.
Are you saying that?
They know what they're doing. But you know what? You know what rings home is that 8 terms Mrs. Morella has been in Congress. She still does not have a serious leadership post, and the Republican Party really doesn't treat her with the respect that her constituents do.
So Dana's answer is to try to fire her.
No, not at all. She's a very good candidate, but you know what? When it was timed in 1995 after Gingrich was in to rein in all the Republicans and vote for some stuff, she was there with them. And I think that as good as she is, she had talked about retiring either this year or next year. And since we do have some excellent candidates who also could get some serious leadership posts, too, and bring some money back to the district.
In a House minority, mind you, Connie Morella is a member of the Republican majority, and she is delivering for her district. And you would like to...
She's still not in a leadership post.
You would like to trade a senior member of the majority party freshman member of the minority
party. They do not treat her that way.
I'll telephone number 301-230-0980, pound 980, Verizon Wireless System. Get online and talk to us.
It's one thing to be thinking about retirement, but it's another thing to be gerrymandered out of your district and to have the entire Democratic leadership
have a lot to do with it.
Yes, basically, Connie Morella has done great things for her constituents for 8 terms, and now she has new constituents. Thank you, Maryland Democratic Party.
No, she actually has the same constituents.
No, she doesn't.
She has had some people taken away from her, but they're actually more conservative. That was from the northern part of Montgomery County.
And Tacoma Park is a big conservative hotbed.
Which is in the 6th District, which is Roscoe Bartlett's land.
Let me ask this. Isn't it true out of the Glendenning office, which is Democrat, that this whole redistricting effort in Maryland has been, they almost wanted to go to court over this thing, and Montgomery County,
they've got a hit list. I sat across the table from Ike Leggett and had him look me in the eye and say, yeah, it's a political process. It's like making sausage and, you know.
Okay, let's move on about Ike Leggett, and that is this. Ike is a possibility that Ike Leggett could be one of the, could be the running mate along with Kathleen Townsend, but Robert Ehrlich also is considering an African American. What do you think about that, Dean?
You know, we don't have a candidate for governor in Maryland. We're focusing on our state house races.
I think that that's an excellent way to make a large constituency that just actually had a lot of its rights taken away in Prince George's County when the elected school board was replaced. Make them feel like there's something going to be given to them because, you know, they haven't gotten a lot from people who take advantage of their vote.
Dana?
I think it's very interesting. We saw this also in the Sauber campaign when the leader of the now Maryland Republican Party, Michael Steele, was picked in a leadership role. We've seen this in the past, and I think that with a majority of minorities in the state of Maryland, we've seen time in and time out that they vote on issues. They vote on things that affect their everyday family life, kitchen table issues.
I think
they will continue
Democrats
to vote
don't
that
even
way.
Let them vote anymore. I mean,
what are you talking about? Prince George's County taking away
their school board.
James, let me ask you this question. With this type of these types of running mates, will this mean that it'll open new doors in one could call moderate Maryland?
I think, you know, if you look nationally and if you look in Maryland, in the Republican Party, people go up through the party based on their talents, based on what they can accomplish, and race is not a factor. It turns out that we have a lot of African Americans that are finding the Republican Party a very hospitable place to be, and that's on merit.
Dean? No comment. Don't blame me.
The Republican Party in the House of Representatives has one minority member.
Okay. Baltimore, Mayor O'Malley. Martin O'Malley, he said yes. He came down to Montgomery County, and now he's saying, I don't know, or let me get out of this thing. Is this because the Democrats, Dana, are telling Martin O'Malley, stay out of this race?
And let me tell you something. Nobody can tell Martin O'Malley anything. This is a man who writes his own ticket, who does everything himself. I actually worked very closely with some of the members of his top administration. He is, and his administration is, an excellent run staff, and they are doing excellent things for the city. And Martin O'Malley right now is thinking about how he can continue to take care of Baltimore City, because let's face it, I went to college there, I lived there for many years, and I commuted to D.C. Even though I worked on the Hill, I love Baltimore so much. We still need to help Baltimore. We still need to remember Baltimore. And I think with such an advocate and such a popular person such as Martin O'Malley, we can keep the focus on helping them. And I think that's what he's looking at seriously.
I think he's taken a lesson from Kennedy Townsend. The longer you stay out of a race and don't actually declare, the more support you can get.
He could do anything. This man is loved. He's loved.
I don't know about that, Dana.
You know what? I invite everyone to go to...
He might be so loved, right, but wasn't it true that 2 months ago a report came out showing that Martin O'Malley has lost strongly in the non-white communities of Baltimore?
But he's taken some very tough stands, and some of those have not been in collaboration with community leaders.
Right.
And I think that's always going to happen. I mean, as we all know, you can't make everyone happy, but overall, he has done so many good things for the city, but to do so, you had to cut some of the pork out.
Okay, our telephone number 301-230-0980, pound 980, on the Verizon Wireless System, absolutely free call. I want to get you online. Our lines are open right now as we go into our next debate, which is going to be Homeland Security. Ashcroft and the FBI, a report coming out this morning saying the FBI has been given too much authority to infringe on citizens' privacy because of what an agent feels could be a suspicious terrorist profiling, either in a church, on the Internet, public domain, wherever. Anyway, the FBI has been giving all this. Before we go to there, let's talk to Pat in Alexandria. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning, darling. A great debate as usual.
Thank you.
And my friend from the other party is going to find out I'm agreeing with him again. This is getting
third
to
time's
habit.
A charm. Yeah,
third time's a charm. I do have one comment, though, and I say this as somebody who's worked with the Republican Party for a very long time. I'm very disappointed in you. What is happening here, I'm afraid, very much is that we are taking partisan politics and saying we are the saviors. And I'm sorry, it doesn't work that way. And I'm listening to you all debate, and I hate to say this, but the young lady from the Democrats really isn't debating. Sorry about that, but if we're not going to work together and we're not going to put all of our talents together, we might as well hang the whole thing up. We're in a problem now. Yes, it's an undeclared war, and yes, my son is over there on the front line, which is fine. That's what he wants to do. But for God's sake, knock the partisan politics aside and start working together for what's best for the entire country.
Well, let me say, I believe that we are trying to do that. But when you have a political system, a free democratic system, where people sometimes disagree on what is best in foreign policy, I think what I'm saying is that I support President Bush's foreign policy. I support first strikes. And some of my friends across the aisle here, while I disagree with them, I respect their right to disagree. They seem to think that we are going a little too far. And that's what we're debating over. And I disagree with them on it, but both sides want to stop terrorism.
I just, for the record, want to say that I have always stood behind, and my thoughts do go out for you, because when you said that your son was over there, that it takes on a whole new realm for you. This war is completely more hard-hitting.
No, his choice, what he wanted to do, and that's
And I respect it. I think that's wonderful, because without men and without women like that, where would we be? We would not be protected. We would be in a completely different situation. And I think that we need to stand behind the president, and that has always been my belief from day one, that we need to do this. We need to watch exactly what we're doing as far as in our next subject. We're talking about going into churches and going into things like that. So those are some of the things that maybe we need the help of the Supreme Court to overview, perhaps.
Oh, God, help us. Not the Supreme Court, please. I think Americans are comfortable speaking for themselves without the court coming into it. Jerry, it's been great, as always. I love First Monday. And to my little
Sunday.
Well, what the heck.
Jerry, we'll all come back tomorrow.
I'll be here.
No, but to my little friend from the other party, it's getting scary. I'm agreeing with you far too much.
All right.
Thank you, Pat.
We love you very much. Pat's over in Alexandria.
I think she brings up a good point that, you know, if we don't agree, the least we can do is keep it on the issues and not, you know, sort of digress into bringing up, say, former presidents. I'm bringing a cardboard cutout next month so that, you know, Jim feels at home with a little picture of Bill Clinton up here.
Okay. You know, the key to...
Now, moving along to Homeland Security, because of our timing, what about Homeland Security? Dean Meyerson of the Green Party, are we losing our American rights, quote-unquote? That's a good term to put it. 301-230-0980, pound 980, in the Verizon Wireless System. We can even throw gun control in there if you want to.
Well, you know, the government has admitted that it has some people in jail who... They have no evidence that it got involved with terrorism. Maybe it made sense to check it out at first, but the time has come to release some of this 100-plus people for whom there's no evidence on. And I'm not trying to put blame, but there are certain things we've found that need to be fixed. Communication within our various intelligence agencies, the relationship between the central offices and the branch offices. I think these things need to be fixed before we look at giving these agencies more power to get into our lives. I think there's plenty of things to fix there first.
That sounds suspiciously like this habeas corpus thing I thought was, you know, part of our Constitution, that, you know, people had to have a trial and you had to tell them what the charges were.
Yeah, those would
except
be,
for citizens. You don't have to do it for anybody else.
I was going
to
say, those would be citizens.
Everyone else you can lock up. And I knew exactly where you were going.
We are talking about folks who are not citizens of this country.
And so they deserve no rights.
People who were rounded up for good reason on suspicion of terrorism. And then, lo and behold, they found out that a lot of these folks were involved, and a lot of the folks that were not involved happened to have other criminal violations. If you are not a citizen of this country, the Constitution does not entirely apply.
But you know, what's so confusing here, guys, and I don't mean to throw this in, and maybe I'm off the beaten path, but as I hear this debate about Homeland Security and how far we should go, if the FBI is going too far, but here's John Ashcroft, who comes up this week in local headlines, criticizing the District of Columbia in so many words about gun control. But the ones that he's speaking in behalf of have criminal records themselves.
John Ashcroft is stepping up for the Constitution, which is what we've all been talking about.
So the Constitution protects the rights of criminals to have guns.
Actually, that's absolutely not.
Are they felons or misdemeanors?
John Ashcroft pointed out that felons can't felons don't have that right. Felons lose a number of their constitutional rights by being felons. The Constitution of the United States protects the right to keep and bear arms, and that is what he is doing, and that is the right position.
But to get back to Ashcroft, I listened to this press conference where he talked about these new powers, the new guidelines the FBI was working under, and it sounds like we're going right back to COINTELPRO and you know, sending FBI agents into churches and meetings and stuff.
Are we looking at McCarthyism again all over, Dean?
Well, we're not there yet, but that's what we want to avoid. The issue is that good police work to deal with this is a tedious thing. There's no quick solution to these problems, and invasive powers aren't going to be the key thing. Having the agencies work effectively is what we need.
Let's go to Fort Washington. Minister Warner. Good morning, Minister.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Fine. Go right ahead, sir. Very quickly.
Just open comment on some different issues.
It's open. Yeah, you can take us back. Don't worry.
Okay.
What is your comment?
My one comment was that one of your guests speak about Martin O'Malley, and I would like kind of equate him to District of Columbia's Mayor Anthony Williams.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's doing an excellent job, and I don't think he's well-liked or well-respected by the black community because he's made some tough choices.
Mm-hmm.
And the other comment I wanted to make was, as far as the terrorism goes, why wouldn't the airlines in Israel, the pilots have a separate compartment? Once the pilot goes in, it's sealed completely, and the plane has to land.
Mm-hmm.
And my third comment was, as far as the school board in Prince George's County, since they no longer have a new school board, and these are well respected professionals, are they going to forego their salary as school board members?
Okay, thank you very much, sir. Let's kind of keep him in line, in mind, rather, as we answer. Ruben, I got to get you on the line now, otherwise I won't get you on the line. Good morning, Ruben. I've been up on Marlboro.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm. Go right ahead, quickly.
One of my feelings on Homeland Security is that I don't think at this present time that we should be in such of a paranoid state of mind, but in a cautious state of mind. We don't want to get into the point where they're going to believe it's going to be McCarthyism, but there are holes in the system.
Okay.
Very large holes.
All right.
That need to be monitored, closed, and evaluated.
Okay, sir. Thank you very much. I appreciate you coming. I think we got to just... I hate to rush you on. I hate to rush people on because we live in such a rush society, but there is a certain thing in our business that has to do with time. I want to kind of close out. I'll start with you, my buddy Dean Myerson, Green Party.
Well, the key with the whole terrorism is having a policy that's going to be effective, that doesn't try and find shortcuts, that doesn't play politics, and we can work together and do this if we avoid the partisanship.
Is the Bush Road going to get a little harder for him now because we're pulling ourselves up by the bootstraps trying to explain Homeland Security? And like the man said, there are some holes.
Yeah, over time, I think that's going to happen.
Mr. James Parolomi. Hold on. Let's do that again. James Parolomi, who is a Republican.
It's been a long morning.
I know you're going to.
Let me tell you, with the Homeland Security, it is a tough situation.
Right.
If you turn up the heat too much on terrorists, people complain. If you turn down the heat because you're concerned about other things, people complain. It's a very difficult balance.
Will the road get tougher for Bush?
It's a tough road right now. It's a tough road, and he's doing a wonderful job on it.
My dear friend Nicholas Sawalk.
I think that, you know,
libertarian.
If we don't respect the rights of Americans and their own civil liberties, that we're really going to go down the wrong road. And I think that Ashcroft is paying lip service to it, but he's not really recognizing the ways we've gone in the past with Martin Luther King and whatnot.
Trump a road for the White House?
Yeah.
Okay. Dana, you got 20 seconds.
Well, first I want to say it's good to be back. I missed y'all very much.
This all time, Dana.
And we must be vigilant against this war on terrorism. We must very much be careful about who and what is in our country and how they are plotting against us and the fact that they are jealous of our freedom. But let's talk about domestic issues with the midterm elections coming up. Let's see how we're going to take care of business here at home and on the kitchen table.
Don't miss it, folks. First Sunday Roundtable. They'll be back next month, and the politics are going to get heavier. It's going to be fun. Thank you very much to my panelists. Dean Myerson, Green Party, Dana Jones, Democrat, James Parmalee, Republican, and Nicholas Sawalk, Libertarian. Got to get out of here. It's gorgeous out. Get out and enjoy the great outdoors. Take care of yourself. Till next time, my friend. Much peace and much love.